Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we will go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we will explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Swick Enterprises, we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 140-plus years of football history and memorabilia. You can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. We're sponsored by MSB Sports Cards. Check out their website for one of the largest selections in America of football cards and football memorabilia. Check out their website at msbsportscards.com. And also by BST Auctions. Check out their website for the upcoming large football card and memorabilia auction at bstauctions.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular, Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Captain, wonderful to be here. I notice I became a senior contributing writer in today's show.
It is an honor to talk to you, Joe. And
well, thank you for the promotion. I appreciate it.
An honor for you to
I appreciate
be
it,
one of our senior contributing writers to Gridiron Greats Magazine with something you recently have written about. And, Joe, I want to lead off our discussion before our guest comes on. We have talked about in the past, and we've touched upon, and you and I have talked about privately, different types of collections of oddball football cards and items.
Mm-hmm.
And, in particular, you have a very interesting article coming up in our spring issue of Gridiron Greats Magazine. For anybody who's listening to the show and is not a subscriber, please check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com, for subscription information. And
How could you not be a subscriber?
An excellent article on a very, very old football game, which is called Ya-Lo. What is that?
Well, it's interesting. You and I were talking before the show, and you said Ya-Lo, and I've always pronounced it Ya-Lo. I don't know why.
Mayo cup of cards.
Yeah, I remember that. It took a couple of years. We had to do a vote on how we're going to pronounce that. But yeah,
true.
Like you and I were talking about before the show, this is an oddball set that I've collected for probably 6 years, and I was introduced to it about 6-7 years ago, and I just decided to write an article about it. And the article I decided to write about for Gridiron Greats is actually predicated on something a little bigger, where we all tend to find ourselves collecting oddball, weird, funny things. I mean, I've got drawers filled with stuff that I shouldn't be collecting, but I collect because I find them interesting. And just a friend of mine and I were talking about the fact that we both collect wax pack wrappers. And at one point we were just laughing. We're like, this is trash. I mean, we collect trash, you know, and it'd be kind of comical we're just talking about the variations in the different wrap papers of like the Shotwells and this. I'm pretty sure if we went back to the printer who made Shotwell, you know, wrappers, for example, we told him about the variations, he'd probably be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly.
But here we are obsessing about, you know, lettering and, you know, typesetting and, you know, whether there's a stadium in the background. And I just find it fascinating that us collectors, you know, pinpoint in on one little thing and off we go. And for me, the Yalo set, the Yalo set, has been one of those. As you said in my introduction, I collect Red Grange. I'm pretty passionate about it. And at some point, you know, 6 years ago, I came across this Yalo set and, you know, and it was advertised as being part of Red Grange. So I do a little bit of homework on it, and I discover, you know, it's, I guess it'd be, what candy set is that that says they have Red Grange running? But it's not, I forget, but at one point, you know, Red Grange was the vice president of advertising for Yalo. So they have, you know, they associate everything with this set with him. And
that's something that a lot of collectors do not realize, that he was the actual vice president. And in your studies of that game, did you find out any more information? Was it just an honorary position, or did he actually do any work for him?
Total guess, but I would imagine this game came out in 1925, and we all know how busy Grange was in 1925. So my conjecture is that, you know, somebody handed, you know, CC Pyle a check and ghost wrote Red Grange the, you know, the introduction and said, we want to promote Red Grange as being the vice president. It's I purely conjecture, but Red was busy gallivanting around the universe, you know, promoting things from movies to foot powder. I doubt very much he sat down and helped somebody design the game or, you know, did that. But that's just me chuckling under my breath. So I'm sure vice president was just a way for someone to link, you know, the superstar of the time to the game. But I started collecting, you know, the player set, you know, or the, you know, the cards to the game. And yeah, the game's pretty boring. It's basically you flip a card over. You know, it's, you remember the old vibrating football game boards you had where you set people up and you hit a buzzer and it just started vibrating around and you're screaming and yelling, hoping something vibrates fast. And this is kind of it. You set up a piece, a player piece, and you flip a card and it says forward five, back five, penalty, interception, whatever. And that's it. And then you score a touchdown and a ball, and then you have a kickoff card. It's a silly game. I mean, I played it, but I started collecting the game pieces and eventually found the boxes, the cards were stored in, and then, you know, probably about 3 years ago, came across the game for sale on eBay, and it was the first time I'd seen it, and won it for the low, low price of $35, you know, meaning it's pretty thinly traded, or thinly collected set, you know, at minimum. Mm-hmm. But before the show, you and I were talking, you said you saw the game a couple years ago.
Yeah, I distinctly remember at a show in White Plains, this was quite a few years ago, I did see a dealer that had a lot of different sports games, and I did see that game there. I examined it. Honestly, I do not remember what he was asking for the game, but I did physically look at it and inspect it, looked at the cards and the like, but I had no interest in buying it. Now, to put you on the spot, what would you honestly think a mint condition set complete with the cards and all the pieces would go for today? You have any idea?
Oh, jeez.
Since you've looked at it quite
like
a bit,
I said,
on eBay and the like. So.
I still look for it, oddly enough, but it is so thinly collected. $200 probably. I mean, it's nothing valuable.
Yeah, I was gonna,
you know,
I was probably gonna say roughly $150 to $250 would probably be a good range for a game like that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize that if they find it in their, say, great grandfather's attic and it hasn't been touched, they feel that they're gonna retire next year. you know, when they sell it, type of thing. Not realizing that it is very thinly collected, and B, you know, condition is everything type of situation with those with those types of games, especially pre-World War II games, boxes, game pieces.
Oh, and
so
mine's pretty
and so
beat
forth.
Up. Mine's pretty beat up. Two of the corners are ripped. You know, writing all over it. Mine's pretty beat up. But that's part of the collecting of it. But I mentioned this kind of in passing in the article, but I probably have 400 of the game cards loosely, and I have them all in top loaders or penny sleeves, and then I have probably another 60 of them that came with the game. Well, at some point, probably about right before I got the game, I was like, all right, let me track these because there's got to be duplicates. Because, I mean, 400 cards. And I started tracking them by what the, you know, what the top left, you know, yardage was. Every card I have no duplicates, which stunned me.
Wow.
I mean, because my cards have come from all over the world, all the United States, just randomly. And to have no duplicates. So, in all honesty, the thing that keeps me collecting this set right now is trying to find a duplicate card. It's like, well, there's got to be duplicates out there. They didn't, you know, just restrike after runners.
So was it produced as a regional game, and then regional cards were placed in the set when it was sold, or what's your theory?
That I don't know.
If any.
That I don't know. There's not enough information out. I mean, I think this. You know. I get the feeling this game was out for probably a year and a half, 2 years. Red Grange got injured. You know, he missed a year, and this game probably stopped getting produced. So, you know, the instruction manual and everything I've read about it, it came out in 1925. Doesn't give a month. 1925, and you know, and I've only seen three instruction manuals, and all three of them had 1925 written on them. So, you know, who knows? But you know. Grange gets hurt, and in that game against New York, misses a season, and you can see his fame probably, you know, went down pretty quick with it. Who knows?
It's an amazing collectible as far as I'm concerned. And again, when I read the article that you wrote and seeing that sheer volume of different cards, I was kind of surprised because I always thought there was probably I said realistically it was probably 100 to 200 different cards that they produced, meaning that they, you know, maybe the next year they produced a different set of cards, you know, different variation, color, whatever the case may be. But to see over 400 without a duplicate, it's just amazing to me. And it is probable that, you know, there could be another 400 out there that you don't even know about. There could be, you know, 800 different cards. Who knows the type of situation?
Silly enough, probably the number one Yalo collector in you know in the United States right now, which is that and $2 gets me a cup of coffee. So,
we're reporting it first here on Gridiron Greats podcast. Yeah. So it could set up the second issue I have that, you know, besides people looking for Steve Largent cards here in Connecticut and on the East Coast, they're now looking for Yalo cards at the same time. And I say, well, I got a sorts. Unfortunately, they're not for sale, and he has cornered the market on them. Do you collect anything else, Joe? I'm just curious.
Oh, I have. This article I wrote for you is called The Silly Things We Collect. And it started off with as, oh, the silly things we collect, and as a tip of the hat to, you know, Dr. Seuss, the places you go, but I dropped the O. So the silly things we collect. And I've got about four more articles lined up behind this talking about the silly things I collect from Red Grange in the mid-40s had this college football. You know, you handed out a piece of paper and you guessed the games, you know, the people are going to win that week and then turned it in and they were at Shell gas stations. I collect those. And then top stickers and mainly the 88 top sticker because it was Largent's last year and he had several variations in there. Now, I know you collect that as well. So,
well, I gotta tell you this, you know, you hit a warm spark in my heart for the stickers because I have the 1981 through 88 top stickers, all neatly put in the top sticker album of that year, collected. I have massive duplicates in a lot of years, too. I also have, from 1981, they came out with a red border set, which was only available in gumball machines. So you would put a dime or a quarter in the machine. I think it was a dime at the time. And I remember putting in and getting probably a half a dozen of those stickers when I saw them. People thought I was nuts. You know, see this guy in his 20s going into the gumball machine, not getting a gumball, but he's trying to get the stickers out of it. And it took me literally, without exaggeration, over 20-some-odd years to finish that set because I never really saw it. And then when eBay started coming out, I started seeing them one and two at a time. And I finally finished that set, and so that was.
Yeah, I'll add that the red bordered Largent card from that year is one of the rarest Largent stickers there is.
Yeah, and what I just find fascinating about that set was, you know, there was literally no collector's interest in it until roughly 20 years later. You know, in my opinion, because I never saw him at a show. I really never, I rarely saw stickers at the show. And then all of a sudden there was a warehouse find of 1987 Topps football stickers. I don't know how many came to the market, something like 1,000 or 1,200 boxes back in, I want to say it was roughly probably 1994, 95. And it just flooded the market with them. They were everywhere. And I said to myself, wow, I mean, I saw them as low as like $2 a box. So, but the red border stickers, I honestly never seen a lot of them. I still don't see them to this day, and it's a tough insert, oddball set of tops from that year. But 88 is to me a very nice year too, because again, that to me ends the pureness of football collecting, because then you had the expansion in 89.
Yep.
And Topps eliminated the sticker set in 1989, which, for whatever reason, it never went over big one way or the other. So, honestly, there wasn't that many people who wanted to continue to collect them. And or market, obviously,
as,
market demand wasn't there. You know, so...
As I was... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. As I was in pursuit of the Steve Largent Master set, many years ago, about every 9 months, I would find a different variation of this 88 top sticker Largent card. And I'm up to about, I think, 14 variations that I've encountered. But, in the effort to stay one step ahead of, somebody in the master registry set, I'd start scarfing up boxes of stickers, and they'd come in, seven card sets, or wax packs, and then it came in 11 card wax packs, I think, or was it 9? I forget. But so next thing I'm just buying up boxes and boxes, and somewhere along the line, I bought a case. I have in my basement a case of 88 Topps, stickers, which is kind of funny. I've got a case of stickers, and I've got a case of 89 Largent Pacific cards that are useless as hell. But very valuable to me.
Wow.
Again, you want to talk about thinly traded market? 89 Pacific Largent cards, are pretty low on the priority.
Wow.
I have friends who've vandalized these cards, just to get my goat, taking them scuba diving and throwing them into the ocean. Lit cigars with Largent Pacific cards, So I mean,
That's the sad part, because Pacific cards, to me, were such a unique had a unique market, in my opinion. And, his name escapes me. Kramer, who owned it, his first name will come to my mind. He really marketed a unique collectible for the marketplace. And he did a great job on it. And, his regional sets out there were just so... interesting to me, especially from somebody collecting on an East Coast perspective type of thing. And again, I will admit, I did try to find the Largent set back in 89, and you could not find it out here on the East Coast. So it was one of those mail order deals. if you wanted to pick it up, that was the only way you were going to get it. Well, Joe, I'm looking forward to your upcoming articles. And, again, as many people in the hobby realize that there's a lot of what are considered to be oddball, non-mainstream sets out there that people really do collect, and they find a lot of enjoyment in collecting those, probably in some cases more so than the mainstream sets. So it's an interesting area of collecting, to say the least. And at this time, I'd like to introduce our guest tonight. He's no stranger to Gridiron Greats magazine and the football card and memorabilia hobby. In my opinion, and the opinion of many others, he is truly a football hobby icon. He is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine. He hails from the great state of Washington, Mr. Mike Blaisdell. Mike, welcome to the show this evening.
Thanks, Bob, and what a great intro. That was awesome. And Joe, you're there as well?
I am, yes, sir.
Always good to talk to you, my friend.
One senior contributing writer to another senior contributing writer.
Absolutely.
Great to be with you, Mike. It's been a long time.
It's not often I have two senior contributing writers on the podcast at the same time, so this is very good. Mike, I want to start off, and it's a question that's probably been asked of you hundreds of times now. It's been asked of me, believe it or not, many times now, is why have you decided to part with a good chunk of your collection, which is now being featured in several upcoming BSD auctions?
Great question, Bob. And it's funny, I went to an event last night with some friends, and I had a couple people ask me last night, why are you selling everything? So it is one of those hot topics.
Was it a hobby event you were at last night? Or just
no,
people
it wasn't. It was a friend's birthday party, believe it or not. But, all my friends know, what my vice has been over the last number of years. So it's great. But, I guess over the years I was really fortunate to have the opportunity to, be able to put together, a huge collection. I first started focusing on football cards and football-related items. I would purchase anything I could find related to football cards or pre-war football because it was just so hard to find back in especially in the mid to late 80s. My focus obviously narrowed over the years because you can't buy everything. But as you can imagine, over 30 plus years, I had a lot of stuff. And I really felt, that I had gone as far as I could or really wanted to go with my collection. And the timing for a number of reasons, I think, was right to downsize. My wife and I are empty nesters. We've built a cabin over on, or a house, I guess, over on a beach house in Puget Sound that we'll be moving to in the future. And it's one of those thoughts, too, as you get older. The last thing I want to do is have something, as unfortunate as it would be to happen to me and have my wife have to deal with, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so that there was a number of things in there that led to that decision. And I'll tell you what, though, the hobby and my collection have given me, years of great enjoyment. And I feel that, I'm honored that, the collection's going to move on to others that will, I know get as much or more enjoyment as I have had over the years, acquiring and owning these special items. I always say the good news is I'm still in the hobby, though, and it'll just be with a more specific focus on Seattle and Northwest-related items.
Mm-hmm. And I think, and I know we talked about this a couple of years ago in Chicago at the National when you had mentioned, I was mentioning to you I was thinking about moving some parts of mine, even though I haven't. There comes a time with every collector, and especially as we grow older, what's going to happen to our collection? And you are definitely correct. You don't want anything to happen to you, and then your wife is stuck with everything, nor would I want anything to happen to me, and Brenda would be stuck with everything type of thing. And it's a tough decision, and I give you a lot of credit, realistically, for making the decision now to move, what you're moving out in the collection itself. So you are to be congratulated, believe me, for a very wise decision, to say the least. So.
Well, thanks for that, and it was a difficult decision, and it wasn't one where one day I said, "Hey, I'm going to do this."
Mm-hmm,
It took
mm-hmm.
it took 2 or 3 years probably of that line of thinking before I finally felt I was at a place that I was ready to make that decision.
Yeah, and Mike, I think I met you 5 years ago, and just and I'll forever remember just another Portland collector, Jim Blumenthal, and I used to make the trip up to Seattle for the show. And I met you. You were sitting behind a table. You had those 1976 Fred Meyer, those black bordered local sets up for sale. And I walked up and saw you had a really nice large one. I started talking about it, and next thing you know, it comes up. We just started talking cards, and every single card I brought up, you knew about the Mayo set, the this, and finally, I'm like, who are you? It's like, in The Princess Bride, when Inigo Montoya meets the six-figure band, it's, who are you? No one of consequence. Anyway, so first I forever remember and associate you with my dearly departed friend, Jim Blumenthal, and then the other is just how cool it was to meet you and just talk to you. And I was just so impressed with how cool you were. Just how knowledgeable and how open you were with sharing a lot of your knowledge. That was my first introduction to you. It's my question kind of segueing in. What have you enjoyed about your collecting and the hobby in general, over the years?
No, thanks for those kind words, Joe. Like you said, we met back at that Seattle show, and it was just fantastic meeting you. I'd heard about you. And so that was fabulous. And like I said, we talked for a good chunk of time there that day and had a great exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, while I think the stuff, our collection, it's great, and the thrill of the chase, is, always ongoing. To me, it's the people I've met over the years that I've enjoyed the most. You mentioned that sharing of knowledge and information, and I think, it's real special among football collectors, and it goes back to the late
mm-hmm.
80s and the early 90s. So I think it was phenomenal. As I've mentioned in the past, Bob and I corresponded back and forth back then on different hobby issues, and it's funny to think about it, but we did all that through the use of the phone and the good old U.S. mail. rather than sending scans or JPEGs, we sent photocopies. Sometimes in color. But, the chance to have met...
Those were the rare photocopies.
Yeah. The chance, to have met so many collectors at shows, just like we did over the years, has led for me to many long-term friendships. And some of my dearest friends, like Mark McRae from California and Keith Schneider up in the Seattle area, I've met through this hobby, and we're close. We still stay in touch. And like you said, Joe, that's how we've met, and I cherish those friendships. Really do.
Mark McRae was set up next to you at that show, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. Mark and I go back to the early 90s. We used to go over when Kit Young, I don't know if you remember, Bob had those shows over in Hawaii. And back in the early 90s, they were really fun shows. I mean, it was a who's who of the hobby back over there. And that's where Mark and
mm-hmm.
myself
mm-hmm.
and my wife and a couple other people, Ted Zanadakis was another one, kind of got together. And we've been friends, ever since. So, very cool.
Wow. Mike, what was the most difficult set that you collected over the years? And in paralleling that, what is your favorite all-time items in your collection?
There was a number of difficult sets. And I think I almost have to, the ones that I completed, I'd have to say that 69 Eskimo Pie issue is ranked right near the top.
Uh-huh.
It took me 20 years plus to find the last panel that I needed. And I remember it was the Jim Nance, Billy Neighbors panel. I remember it so well because, every want list I'd send out, all the searches, everything was for that. And that was just a tough bugger to find. The 26 Spalding football player issue was another tough one, especially if you start attacking the different, backs that you can find for.
Mm-hmm.
From the ad backs to the bio backs. Then there are some sets, I came pretty close. The 65 Cardinal Big Red biographies, off the milk cartons. I think I was about three short from completing that set.
Well,
And there was a number of undocumented cards that were never listed in Beckett, so just a tough set right along there with the Fairmont Dairy Chiefs, the Jones Dairy Bills, Kelly's Potato Chip Stickers.
Where would you put, like, star player candy, you know, stuff like that up in there? I mean, it's like you mentioned undocumented. I mean, there's so many, cards in there.
I would say, you know, one thing I really loved the chasing those regional issues from the 60s, as you can see, and I would put star player candy. It's in its own category. Those cards from the late 20s, it's so rare to even find a card anymore. They're so seldom seen. Just really tough issue. I probably had maybe, a dozen that I was able to, find over the years. I mean, they're that tough.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. Go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead, Joe. I'm just curious. Did you have any idea how many actual sets you had in your collection, number-wise? Did you ever inventory them that way?
I inventoried them. I never did a count on them, though. I'll have to go back and do that because I still have the old teach. Yeah.
I'm just curious if you ever... I had 368 different sets or whatever, that type of thing.
Yeah, and that was the thing with me. I was definitely a set collector, probably first and foremost. It's kind of funny how, you kind of gravitate to different parts of that. I'll have to go through and see what I come up with there. That's a great question, Bob. Bob, you'd also ask favorite all-time item in my collection. I get asked that question quite a bit as well, and I always would come up with, I love the 59 Bazooka football set, one of my all-time favorites, and there were some others. But, when I think of, this item, not necessarily card, I kind of go in a different route. And when I packed up my collection for MSB Sports Cards and BST Auctions to haul off, there were just a handful of football items I kept, behind. And one of those items was a football statue or statuette, as they were known back in the late 1800s, called Football, done by a sculptor, by the name of John Rogers. And I actually wrote an article about the work of John Rogers specific to this football sculpture in, I think it was issue 18 of Gridiron Greats magazine. So... anybody ever goes back, they can read the article on that. And anyway, my good friend Keith Schneider, who owns Gasoline Alley up in Seattle, he invited me over to his house back in the late 80s, and he had a bunch of, football memorabilia on display in his house. It's, fantastic display at his home. And he had one of these John Rogers football sculptures. And when I saw it, I just fell for that piece. I, said, someday I need to find that, one of those for myself. And a number of years later, when the Duke Hawk collection came up for auction, one of the lots was a John Rogers football sculpture, and I was, fortunate enough to win that item. And it's, still a centerpiece in my sports room. And as the story goes, many times Rogers would use family members as models for his work. Well, the football statue was modeled after Rogers' three sons and the captain of the Yale football team at that time, who was named William Herbert Corbin, better known as Pa Corbin, a legendary early football star who was one of the first players to use hand signals in a game. And Rogers' sons had attended Yale along with Corbin and were documented to post as the subjects for that sculpture. So it's a neat historical piece to me and just gorgeous.
How rare are those?
I've only seen a handful of them, through the years. I mean, probably no more than, five or six. And the one I, have is in just fantastic shape, because normally you find them in pretty rough shape. Just a fantastic piece.
I was going to ask you what your favorite thing was. I mean, because people used to ask me that all the time, and I always explain them, there's a difference between what my favorite item is and what my most expensive item is.
exactly.
And they're often not the same.
That's very true.
Yeah. My favorite thing is, an autographed Steve Largent card my sister gave me for Christmas in 1998. That kick-started me back into the hobby. I mean, that looking at that one card, I remember crying when I got it, and it totally reintroduced me back into the hobby. That's my favorite thing. So,
that's
curious.
Awesome.
I mean, you've been around for, you know, since way longer than me. And I've always tipped my hat to collectors like you who blazed the path for us new guys. Do you have any unique collecting stories? I mean, you know, you've bumped into all kinds of, you know, different personalities over the years.
You know, I really have, and sometimes it's been a cast of characters. back in, I don't know, Joe, if you weren't collecting in the early 90s, and it was kind of neat. In Seattle, there was a number of shows that, you know, were larger regional shows that they were mm-hmm. putting on up in the Bellevue area. You probably heard about the Bellevue shows in the early 90s. And they were able to bring, you know, a lot of the big dealers, you know, like Mr. Mint and Mastro would come in, all the big wigs. And I can remember, you know, even meeting an individual named Alan Hager one time came out and set up at that show. And he's a little notorious in the hobby. And I can remember the first show that they did. You were talking earlier about large rookie cards, and Bob was mentioning not being able to find them on the East Coast. Well, a good friend of mine, Don Neamy, and myself, we had dealers from the East Coast, and we would have them, you know, find as many Largent rookies as they could and then ship them to us. And we would come into a show, and I remember that first Bellevue show, we must have had, you know, several hundred, you know, Largent rookie cards. I never counted how many they were. And we sold out of them the first night.
Yeah,
we
sold
all those Largent rookies. I mean, it was fascinating. So that's why they were so hard to find. We were importing them.
Well, who would have known?
The second story I can relate to the shortage of Largent rookies here on the East Coast. My friend Mike Blaisdell and his partner cornered the mark. Wow.
Yeah,
and then
I never heard that.
And then fast forward about 15 years, and I cornered it again.
You sure did. You won up this, though. You really did.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think I still have probably 900 Largent rookie cards in my collection.
Oh, my goodness. So some of them probably passed through here.
Yeah, probably. I used to watch the population of, like, the PSA 9s and PSA 8s. I mean, at one point, I think there were, like, you know, 60 PSA 9s, and I owned 45 of them. You know, it was ridiculous.
Oh, man, yeah.
So, I know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah. It was bad.
I have another little story, too, and it doesn't really involve any hobby names, but, you know, for me, it kind of explains how I was back in the mid to late 80s. You know, I mentioned I kept a few items from my collection, and there was one other item that I kept that means something to me. And it was a set of Chiquita Banana NFL stickers from the early 70s. And it was this mail-in, you know, sticker premium that had all the little helmets of the teams, you know, kind of a pretty cool item. Seldom seen back then.
Right.
You know, I can remember, you know, as a kid, you know, growing up and making sure my mom bought the bananas at the store just so I could get those NFL stickers. You know, great memories there. So a little backstory is back in the 80s, I subscribed to the SCD just like everybody else. You know, it was really our source for, you know, sports cards, you know, and memorabilia than shows. And for a couple of years, I would see an item, I was interested, and I'd get on the phone, I'd call and find out it had been sold several days prior. And I'm like, how does this keep happening? Well, since, you know, what I found out was by the time I got my SCD here on the West Coast, most of the U.S. had already had their SCD for several days. So learning from that, I was one of these crazy guys. I had my SCD subscription sent to me next day mail.
I think
it cost me like $700 a year to have that service, but I mean, it really paid off because I was able to get the jump on all the ads. So anyway, back to the story on this sticker panel. So this has been April of 89. I received my SCD, and I found this Chiquita Banana set was offered for sale by the sports collector store out of the Chicago area. I knew those guys, Pat Quinn, Don Steinbeck, you know, great guys. I bought a lot of stuff from over the years. Well, And it was advertised for like $25. So they opened at 10 a.m. Pacific the next day, so I'd planned to call them first thing the next morning. Well, at the same time, my wife was pregnant with our daughter. And that next morning, she went into labor. And so as we're getting ready to head to the hospital, it's just a little bit before 10, so I tell my wife, I said, hey, I need to make a phone call at 10.
Oh, my God.
So she's
anxiously
waiting. I called Pat Quinn at the sports collector store, and I said, hey, is this available? And he says, oh, yeah. And I said, well, can you put a hold on it for me? I'll send you off a check. She's like, no problem. Well, needless to say, as I turn around and I see my wife, you know, staring daggers through me, she'd overheard that call, and trust me, she was not very happy. And I'm still reminded of this story several times a year. So that item I kept behind. You know, the good news is my daughter was born later that evening. The good news is my daughter was born later that evening. And she will one day have that Chiquita banana sticker set.
Awesome. I was just going to say, that's something you got to get. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Well done.
I will think about that anytime I see one of those for sale and just buy them randomly now. Thinking about them. Mike, I'm gonna put you on the spot right now. This is off the script. You remember what the first card item I bought from you back in probably the early 1990s. And I want to tell the listening audience, Mike was one of our original subscribers to my old newsletter, which ran from 1992 to 1999, Bob Swick's Football Times, which was my response to being canned from SCV when they had the big turnover there. And I stopped writing for them. But, I want to put you on the spot if you remember, because I distinctly
it
was.
Well, the neat thing is I still have all those newsletters because I'm one of those guys. I save all this correspondence.
They're rare.
They're
rare. I'm worried to see them go out to auction, though. That's the only thing.
You know, I kept those.
Always,
I kept a lot of my hobby stuff behind. Yeah, you know, my hobby newsletters and stuff from the years, I did keep those behind because I really enjoy that part of the hobby, too. But back to your question, what did I sell you? Was it some type of a Topps insert or something?
You got it. I bought the 75 checklist set from you, complete with the Topps newsletter with it.
Oh, that's
that came
right.
With it.
That's
and I
right.
was looking for that newsletter more so than the check. I had some of the checklist cards already, but I got it was nice because I got the sheet, and then I ended up collecting the cut set of them. But I really wanted that newsletter because I had never seen it. So, Mike, you got that correct. That is a good memory, say the least.
So, Mike, I got my spam email from the boys at BST. Their upcoming auction opens, I think, on Saturday. Any insight? What are some really cool things that you've got coming up in this auction that we can look forward to seeing?
Well, there's some really neat items. I think probably those Overland Candy wrappers.
Yeah.
I think Sammy Baugh.
Mm-hmm.
There's a former Heisman winner, former University of Washington player. I mean, there's just some really neat players there, and I'm really excited to see those hit the block, so to speak. I think that there's also going to be some fabulous display boxes from the 50s and 60s.
It's the backstory behind the Overland Candy. I'm very, most of the stuff that I know about this old esoteric stuff I learned from Andy Becker calling me and bending my ear for an hour.
Well, it's interesting about the Overland Candy. I had this would have been sometime in the 90s. I had found a candy box, display box for Overland Candy. It had a football player. It looked like a Grange type image of it booting a ball, and it was football, a surprise in every wrapper. And so I always knew that there had to be something to that. And of course, we're all familiar, or most of us are anyway, with the baseball Overland Candy wrappers.
Mm-hmm.
So one day these came up on eBay, and there was the guy had three of them, I think, if I remember right. The Sammy Baugh was definitely one of them, and I won them in the auction. And I can remember after I got them, I messaged back, hey, received them, they're fantastic, can you tell me where you got these? And the guy says, well, I got them from my, I think it was his late uncle's estate or something like that, and his uncle had been in player personnel with the Los Angeles Rams and another team. That was his career. So, but he says, and that's all I know about these. And so, I still have, it's where did these things come from? Because it's just been a handful that have ever been, at least documented in the hobby. And why are they so scarce?
Yeah, exactly.
Always a good question.
I'm curious, where do you think the hobby's going to be, let's say, 10 years from now? I ask questions from a lot of people and for a lot of people, and I'm just curious what your thoughts are, if any.
It's a question I remember being asked 10 years ago and even 10 years before that, what I'm always amazed with is how quickly 10 years goes by. Really goes fast. And I think we all gravitate, to our pastime hobbies, after we kind of settle down and have the disposable income to spend on our hobbies. And I don't think that dynamic's going to change. There's a lot of discussion about, some of the younger kids, coming up and what are they going to do? Are they going to collect? And I know there's a lot of hobbies. I have Triumph sports cars too, that I have collected over the years. And sports car clubs are, where are we going to find younger people that want to collect the cars? And so that's a good question. But with the football hobby, I'm amazed how it's continued to grow over the last even 5 years. I'm seeing more and more new collectors, that are starting to more specialize into different football realms. And it's great to see. So, I guess I'm really optimistic. I think that, there's the group of football collectors will be larger, but, it's definitely going to be more specialized. They're going to have a focus on a certain part of it, whether it's, graded material, whether it's programs, whether it's ticket stubs, whether it's sets, cards, pre-war, the history of the game. I do think that it's going to continue to grow.
I think it varies. I used to be a set collector, and at some point, I started collecting really cool, ticket stubs and programs and photographs, and next thing I really started migrating to that. And I think you're spot on, Mike. I mean, people will collect things, and then their interest will peak. They'll hit a plateau, kind of like you did.
Sure.
There used to be a guy on LPS whose signature line was, we don't own these cards. We just borrow them for a certain amount of time, and then we release them back into the wild or something like that. And that always really put a smile on my face. He's kind of right.
Yeah. It's so true. It is so true. And I feel honored to have been part of that process.
Yeah.
Well, I think inevitably in any hobby, there's always going to be specialist collectors. And in the same light, there's going to be generalized collectors. And I know, Mike, I have to place you in a generalized collector area because you have so many different things from so many different areas. It's such a unique collection, to say the least.
Right.
And it has always amazed me what you've collected over the years. And it's just... to bring it up to auction at this time, I just think it's so unique, so special, and it's will be, in my opinion, the big football card and memorabilia hobby story of 2017 is the disbursement of a large part of your collection and what it will actually realize in the market, which I know you're not worried about, but I think a lot of people are very interested in seeing what a lot of things are going to go for. That's inevitable in this kind of situation.
I mean, it will be the market. I mean, some of these things are so, they're so rare. It will be the market, I'm curious to see where they go too. Because, it comes down to like you and Carl are two of the more advanced collectors in our hobby, for football.
Right.
And, I'm glad to see you sticking around because, the kind of knowledge you have, spanning three decades worth of collecting or more is, the hobby needs. So I'm glad you're sticking around.
Oh, that's great. Like I said, and I'll be in Chicago at the National this year. I'm already looking forward to it. So you can't get rid of me that easily.
Yeah, ditto. I'll be there too. So, but I'm sure we'll see you at the couch behind the BST, behind the BST bench.
Oh yeah.
So.
most definitely.
I am sure we'll be breaking bread in Chicago, and we'll be talking more. And again, I give you a lot of credit for your decision. It's a decision I have put off many occasions, and it just gives me something to think about again with regards to what happens to a collection when some of it has to go one way or the other. And I think
yeah.
you made a really good move, a wise decision, and it's good to see you going back into the hobby. And it'll be very interesting to see who gets what as the dust settles over the next few
sure
auctions.
Will. Yeah, very
Mike,
good.
Thank,
well, thank
you so
Bob.
Much for being on the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you both. Thank you, Joe. It was great talking with you guys. And we'll see
you
soon.
You too, Mike.
Okay.
See you, Mike.
All righty. Bye.
We'll get caught up in Chicago. Thanks. Mike Budsdell, the incredible collection that's going to be coming to the market in BSC auction over the next few auctions. And what a tale to tell. And, again, I definitely feel old doing a show like this after talking to Mike, bringing back a lot of memories for me from going back to the 70s going to shows and 80s going to the shows. And I know something I always talked about in the past, I would go to a card show and I would ask dealers, do you have any football cards? And they would look at me funny, or they would go underneath the table, there would be a cheese box, to give me $5 for it. So I would buy these closed cheese boxes not having any clue what was in them. And I would just go home and keep sorting them. And that's how a collection began way back when.
Yeah.
And when football got red hot, every frustrated baseball card dealer became an expert in football cards all of a sudden. And I just found that whole section pretty amazing at the same time. So I kind of, I guess I wrote out a lot of different storms over the years in the hobby. And I didn't really change one way or the other.
You know? Look at, I mean, you know, here we have Mike Blaisdell, super collector, on. I'd rank you right up in there. I mentioned Carl. I mean, you know, as a super collector, Mike, I was held up on a pedestal just because, you know, how open he is about things. You know, you're up there. I mean, you know, one of your first sets you've opened, 1965 Tops. I mean, before I was born, there's a young, you know, Bob Swick. Of course, I imagine you having the mustache, but I mean, a young Bob Swick, you know, ripping open 65 Tops. So, I mean, these are, you can't, yeah, this is irreplaceable knowledge. And not to mention just how involved you are in the hobby. I mean, you know, from being a publisher to, you know, the owner of a podcast. I mean, this is giving back to the hobby that you love. So,
that's
a whole other aspect.
I'm a big believer, and I harp on this all the time. You know, if we don't educate people about the hobby, there's not going to be a hobby in the future. And as far as I'm concerned, football cards have been around for a heck of a long time, and they're still being printed, and they're still being bought and sold. So to nurture the hobby, you know, the more collectors we can bring in, the more knowledge we bring to the hobby, the better the hobby becomes in the future. And I think that was a big source of my frustration when Sports Collectors Digest back in 1991, they went through a big upheaval, and they basically cleared house as far as writers were concerned. And I wrote for them from roughly 1980 to 1991, and I usually had once a month one or two articles on oddball football cards, and I started writing about football publications, so on and so forth. And when they canned the football people, I said to myself, well, okay, so what's the hobby now? So there's no more football? Is that what they're telling us, type of thing? And to me, that was more of the beginning of the end for them, because they started to contract more and more. And to this day, you know, I don't read it anymore. And very few people read that SCD. And I started my newsletter, and it was quasi-successful for the first few years, and I kept it going for 7 years. And then transitioned into when Frank started Gridiron Greats magazine. I wrote for him in the beginning, and then took over the publication. So, you know, to me, there has to be an outlet. There has to be a way for people to understand about the hobby. I mean, you know what I'm saying, I'm sure, and most of our listeners know the same thing. And I think that's an important aspect of the hobby. One quick hobby story that came to my mind while Mike was talking. Years ago, back in the 80s, I used to run a little ad, a blurb ad in the local paper, buying football cards. And I had a kid call me up, not a kid, it was a guy in his 20s. He says, I got a box of football cards. If you got any baseball cards, I'll just trade you for them. I said, okay. So he comes over to my house. He's got a TV set-sized box filled with football cards. So I said to the kid, the guy, I said, I can't possibly trade you what I got. He says, listen, I just want to get rid of them. They're a combination of mine and my brother's. I just want to get rid of them. I said, well, let me go through them and let me at least value them for you. And he said, no, I'm done. So I had whatever I had two, I distinctly remember two white binders full of baseball cards for whatever reason, star cards, nothing there. So I said, well, let me give you these two albums and I'll throw some cash in. And he said, no, just take it. And I went through the box and it was like looking at a history of football cards roughly from 1970 to 1986. It was just an amazing box to go through. And I still remember that phone call. I distinctly remember the whole situation again. And it's just an amazing part of it. You know, the lore of the hobby over the years type of thing.
Yeah.
For that to happen,
well,
today,
you've got stories.
It'll be pretty rare.
Well, you've got stories about being at shows where people would come in with collections of baseball and football, try and sell them to dealers, and the dealers would take the baseball and then just want it. And you'd find, them dumping football cards in the dumpster behind the show. It was just a necessary evil. I mean, this is, and then you think about how far along football is now. I mean, and have weathered many storms. I mean, I feel lazy. I feel like I'm riding on a lot of, the shoulders of giants here. I got back into collecting in 99 and then it took me a while to even find TSA, the CU boards or eBay. I hear stories about having to, next day air your catalog out or mailing color copies of things and stuff. And I just, I tip of the hat, to the people who paved the path before me. So,
it's amazing. All right, we're down. We have a 2-minute warning, Joe. I'm going to hand it off to you. What did we learn on tonight's show?
I had goosebumps talking to Mike just from the first time I met him. I mean, you knew Blumenthal, Jim Blumenthal, very dear friend of mine, lived in Portland.
Yep.
He and I used to go up to that carpool and go up to that show, a couple times.
Yep.
And, when we went to Nationals, we'd get the same flight and compare cards. We were submitting the PSA on, at the airport. But, that was the first time I met Mike, and I just remember how impressed I was, how classy he is. And every time I speak to him, it just reinforces that. Classy, very, very classy man. So I've always dug that and respected that about him.
He's definitely a football card and memorabilia hobby icon. And I'm a little choked up today because it's really, truly happening. That collection is going to the market, going to auction, and great collection is going to be broken up. And, it's I don't know. I got mixed feelings today because it is something to me that is inevitable, and in a way I should be rejoicing, but in a way I'm pretty sad because I really know what went into that collection for him to collect it, the time, the effort, the searches and the like. There's a lot of great strides were made to get what he got, and I'm happy to see it going. And in a way, I'm very sad to see it go at the same time. But that's just me.
That's a great way to put it.
With regards, but again, I'll be glad to see him in the National. I'll be glad to see you get caught up on everything again. And we've got less than a minute. Any other thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I started collecting Hall of Fame rookie cards, I mean, there are guys like Mosh, and Fightful DC, who came before me. And Mosh was Greg Ole III. He lived in Chicago. Museum of Sports History was Mosh. And he was eventually, people didn't like Mosh because he was a purchaser, not a collector. He wasn't good.
Right.
He didn't care about the hobby. He just collected.
Right.
When he went down, for tax evasion fraud, I forget when, there was a lot of people who silently clapped. And, such a difference between that and this. So,
very true. All right, we're out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. We'll be back at the end of the month with another show. Joe, thanks for being on tonight, and we'll see everybody.
Always a pleasure, Captain.
Thanks for being on.
Ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, shooby-dooby-doo-boop-boo.